Yates in the backfield takes the snap. Looks to the right, throws deep. Oh, my goodness.
Caleb Montgomery open
catches on the 40-yard line. He cuts it up the middle, and he's going to score. He's going to score. Montgomery on play number one scores on a 64-yard pass. I can't count. Okay, explain what just happened on that play right there. Montgomery
a fumble.
Chops the ball, and he just almost picks it up. What a play. What a play. He came in and dropped the hammer, the Thor hammer down on the ball carrier. The ball squirts. Blown up by Mr. Who? Montgomery flies in the backfield. Takes down Mark. Lost three. Now a timeout is called by the front. Mason Pooch is going to run 100. He's got a blocker. He's going to get the first down. And he cuts back across the middle. And he's across the 40, to the 50, to the 45. He cuts to the left side. He's across the 30, the 20, the 15, the 10, 5. And he scores a touchdown. 1 second to go before half. Hunter Nichols sprung that play with a block to the right side.
Welcome to the Viking Red Zone Week 6 Preview Show, where we go over the huge win against the Alexander Spartans, as well as a week that was in the DVC. And we wrap up this show with the VCVikings.com Player of the Week. The Viking Red Zone is brought to you by J&K Contracting. One call, we do it all. Your co-hosts for tonight, David Lugs Herold and Nathan Lamb. And our special Week 7 guest, the starting wide receiver for the 1993 playoff-winning Viking and two-time All-State wide receiver, Dusty Ward.
Welcome, everybody, to Episode 7.1, the Alexander Review Show. A couple clips here from the game.
Awesome.
In the preview, that was really cool. The show is brought to you by J&K Contracting. One call, we do it all at 698-3521. Should be a pretty good show today. We got Dusty Ward here, yep. Junior high ranks.
Awesome.
Another junior high coach coming in.
Yep. Got our second one in. We kind of follow a trend here. We try to get at least two from each level.
Right. We started with the Little Vikes, and
yep.
Now we're second weekend with the junior high, and we'll go from here. But yep. Should be a good show today.
And I just want to bring up, too, that every guest that we've had has been an All-State player for the Vinton County football program. Just tells you the level you have to be to come onto our podcast. We're a different level. We bring in the best of the best. So it's great having Dusty on here.
Why am I here then?
Well, we didn't say we're the best. Oh. We just have guests that are the best.
Well, yeah. No, Nate, actually what it is, he harasses people until they come.
I'm not going to disargue that. I'm making them all come too, buddy.
Come to your house, knock on the door, leave stuff, leave little presents and everything else, text you, call you.
Guilt trips, man. Yeah, remember when your mom used to babysit me, man? Come on, dude.
Okay, so should be a good show today.
Yeah,
we're 2-1 in the league.
We are 2-1 in the league. That is awesome.
Let's Alexander all week long, junior high, high school. So give the junior high scores, and then we'll go into the varsity game.
Okay, all right. Yeah, Alexander week, week 6 of the TVC. Junior high 7th grade played Tuesday night, won 26-8. Junior high 8th grade won 44-0 on Thursday night. Actually, it was Wednesday night because we had our bonfire on Thursday night. So actually got moved to Wednesday night. Cool thing about the 8th grade game is we had four linemen that actually got touchdowns in that game. Me being a former lineman, I love to see that. You know, so.
That's probably a record.
Yeah, it probably is. I don't know if you've ever had four. But there was Bradley Congrove, Timmy McManus, Bradley Hutchison, and Blake Graves. All four got touchdowns. That was great to see. It's always good to reward the guys that, you know, have to grind it out for you every game. It's nice to see them get a little bit of attention. So, really cool that happened on Wednesday night. Okay, so then we had our bonfire on Thursday. I didn't make it to the bonfire. I'm sure it was spectacular. I didn't get to go to it.
I didn't either, but...
Yeah, I'm sure Dusty was there. Were you?
Yeah, I was there for a little bit. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad at all.
Yeah.
A lot of people in parade this year. A lot of people.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Now, worst thing about it is halfway through it, oh, it started pouring big time.
I heard
it
was a big rain.
It started raining big time.
It rained pretty much all week last week.
Oh, it did.
So I'm sure it was over early, I'm guessing, for the bonfire. But it was still awesome, though. So, okay, so Friday night, we hosted the Alexander Spartans. Again, that homecoming festivities. I can't remember who the homecoming queen was. If you guys could tell me, do you remember who it was?
Queen.
Is that who it was?
No. Did you say queen or
queen,
king?
Queen.
Oh, I don't know who. The
queen and
was.
King, I guess. Queen. King was Marcus's son, right?
Yeah, Simon.
Simon, that's
Simon
awesome.
Games, yes, he was.
Really cool to hear that. I can't remember who the queen was. I apologize for that. We'll figure it out here in a minute. If we do, we'll let you guys know. I guess, anyway, so we come into Alexander. I'm going to write off some stats here, then we'll talk about the game. So, team stats, we had 14 first downs to their 18 first downs. We had 35 net rushing yards for 380, or 35 rushing attempts for 383 rushing yards. They had 47 rushes for 191 yards. We had 90 passes, 90 yards passing. They had 162 yards passing. Total offense for the game, I believe this is the first game we've had more yards of total offense than the team we played against. We had 47 plays for 473 yards of offense. And the crazy number in this game that I took out of it is they had 82 plays for 353 total yards of offense. We were 3 of 9 on third down conversions. Like, see a little bit better number there, but, you know, as I know, we didn't see a lot of third downs. It was pretty easy scoring most of the time. They went 7 for 16, so that's 16 third downs. You know, that's kind of crazy. So, awesome stat for us. We were 3 for 3 in the red zone, 100%. That was great to see. They were 3 for 5 in the red zone. Some individual stats for the game. Nayland Yates, 17 carries, 272 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns. Missed the rushing record by 24 yards, I believe. Really close to it, man. Almost had a shot at it. It was really cool to see. 6 of 12 passing for 90 yards and a touchdown. Didn't really have to pass very much in this game. I think most passes were just kind of shots, you know. I mean, we threw a lot of deep balls with
him.
Nevin Yates, 7 rushes, 57 yards and a touchdown. Caleb Montgomery had another big 4 receptions, 72 yards and a touchdown. 5 rushes for 46 yards. And he also, on the defensive side of the ball, had 11 tackles, 2.5 for a loss, 1 interception, 1 broken up pass. He actually had a fumble that he broke up to, you know, but the kid ended up getting it back, so he didn't get the recovery.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Big, huge hit. Had a lot of big plays on the defensive side of the ball. Kid I wanted to mention here, Antonio Mendez, been out for 3 weeks, I believe, with a head concussion. Mm-hmm. Comes back this week, gets 7 tackles. The more impressive part of that stat is 3.5 for a loss. Led the team in lost tackles in the game. Kid was all over the field defensively, had a great game, and I know we haven't had a chance to mention him much this year because he's been hurt.
Right.
Really stepped up. Really proud of him. Good job, Antonio. Hunter Nichols also had 7.5 tackles. I know Caleb Montgomery led the team in tackles with 11. Kaysen Collins, and I know we've talked about him a lot on this show, and he had 6 tackles. 6 of those assisted tackles, which means, you know, you only get a half a credit for an assisted tackle. So that means, really, you know, he was around, you know, what, 10 tackles, 11 tackles in the game. I mean,
right.
As a defensive tackle, that's pretty good. The defensive tackles don't get a lot of tackles, and he's getting around the ball. So we're seeing a lot of growth from him on the defensive side of the football, and that's really cool to see. Another interesting stat for the game, we had 1 punt the entire football game, and I thought that was awesome. 1 punt. So
that was actually kind of good with the weather conditions.
Yeah.
That was bad.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and it was. It was a muddy. And we know the field. We know when it rains, that field is not in good shape.
Yeah.
It looks good, but it's not in good shape. So we also only had 5 plays in the first quarter and only 2 minutes and 16 time of possession. So A.J. Marks, 35 rushes for Alexander, 166 yards rushing, 1 touchdown, 13 of 33 with 1 interception and 120 yards passing. Chase Harris had 9 attempts for 38 yards rushing, the big fullback that they had. I think he actually played tailback. 2 touchdowns for him, and he had 62 yards receiving in the game. So
played some quarterback, too.
Did play a little bit of quarterback, too, So. I guess let's talk a little bit about the game. Kind of crazy stats. They had 82 plays. We had the ball for 2 minutes in the first quarter. We only had 3 minutes in the second quarter. They did a good job of keeping us off the field in the first half. Just kind of felt like offensively, once we got the ball in our hands, we were going to tear them up, and I think we did. But I ask you first, Dusty, how did you feel about the game?
Well, the first thing I got to say is those kids was good kids, good group of kids, Alexander kids, because I remember one play right now, Nayland Yates is running right to the bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
He's about to hit the bleachers. Number 4, I don't know who that is from Alexander. He actually pulled his shirt back and actually stopped him from hitting. Very good sportsmanship. But the game and everything else, like you stated earlier, it was sloppy. There were so many fumbles at the first series and stuff. I mean, so many fumbles, and people were slipping down. Then after a while, it took our defense, I don't know, about a quarter and a half to realize that they had to kind of slow down. Because I talked to Nevin, Hunter, and those kids, stuff like that, is whenever they go and fill the hole, instead of filling a hole real fast like they would do in a dry field, they'd have to fill a little slower because the kids would have to break off and stuff. There wasn't much juking inside there because weather condition stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
I would really say instead of Antonio Mendez was exceptional. It really impressed me. But
yeah,
the biggest challenge I had seen that the freshmen, three freshmen that start for us, you had Nick Hearn, you had Jaden Spires, and Eli Downs.
Yeah.
They had some punts outside, and Eli Downs had some kicks outbounds and stuff. Jaden had some fumbles and stuff. Nick Hearn's long snap stuff.
Yeah.
I tell you one thing, they overcame that. They actually matured that game. I was really impressed with that a lot. I really was. But the defense-wise, that's what I mostly look at as defense, is that the kids later on in the game, they actually noticed the formations and started watching an offense coordinator find out how to react to the plays and stuff. Knew if they was going in motion this way or if the back went adjusted itself to the right or left of the quarterback, they kind of knew which way the ball was going. Now, if you had that big old number 40 back here, heck, 90% of the time he was running the ball, and we could not get a real good hit on him.
Because
he was just so elusive. He was a big kid.
He was big and elusive,
He
was hard to take down. And in that mud, it kind of benefits a guy like that, to be honest, because, you know, you got to have good footing. Without good footing, he's got the advantage, you know, because he's making the move before you can react.
I went in the locker room before the game, and we was all sitting there and stuff, and scout report came back, number 40 was hurt. So we was all planning on him not being on his A game, but I tell you one thing, we came in the halftime, all crap, our scout report is completely wrong.
Yeah.
He's tearing up. He was blitzing inside there. He was a real good linebacker. Our offense line, they did a great job. When we're offense, I like watching offense line. You can actually tell how productive team is going to be by watching our offense line. Our offense line did a great job. Really did.
Yeah.
How many penalties did we have in that game?
We had 8 penalties. They had 11. I think we had 65 yards, I believe, in total penalty yards. So, which, I mean, 8's a lot. I mean, 11's worse, you know, obviously. And it's a lot to do with the yardage you get on your penalties. We get a lot of them 5-yarders, it seems like, is what we get. Mm-hmm. The teams we're playing against are getting 10 and 15 yarders. You know, they're getting blocks in the back there. So they end up, I don't know how many games I don't think we've had a game where we've had more penalties than the other team. But we are, right, you know, we're not scot-free. We're getting 7, 8, 9 penalties a game, and you don't want that either. That's still too many that you don't want to have.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
That's different too. But, yeah, I agree with you in that. And that number 40, great player. I think, and again, you're watching the game as a defensive coordinator, so I'm watching the game, and it's the A.J. Marks and Chase Harris show, with Chase Harris is number 40.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched plenty of times, and I could be wrong, but I seen it at least 2 or 3 times I thought of. A.J. Marks just had I-beams for Chase Harris. It didn't matter who was running around, and I seen other kids open underneath for 6, 7-yard passes.
Man.
He wasn't throwing it to him. He was just waiting on Harris to get open every play, you know. So
the biggest flaw I've seen with that quarterback is that he might look away for a quick second, then he's going opposite direction. He never did turn his shoulders or anything else like that.
Yeah.
And that's what really helped out our defense a lot, because they started realizing that about second
got predictable
quarter, which way. Oh, yeah, big time. It's just their offense.
Yep.
They never really changed their front. They never went tight end much.
Yep.
They just stayed 5 front. 2 tackles, 2 guards, and a nose guard. And what did we do? We plugged up the gaps. That's what we did.
And again, I'll tell Nathan this one, you know, they didn't score. They got 20 points by midway through the second and didn't score again the rest of the game, right? So, you were commentating it. So, I mean, what's going on in your head while you're watching that?
Yeah, the reason they got out to that lead in the first half was our mistakes.
Yeah.
Especially on special teams.
Yeah, like Dusty said. That's
That's why we didn't have the ball any in the first quarter was 2 kickoffs. One we did not field at all, and the second one I think it was a fumble.
Yeah.
That they recovered. And, just kind of messed everything up right off the bat. But then we, you know, in the second quarter, we took a deep breath and collected ourselves and started playing like we knew how we could play. And like you guys have said, both have said, you know, they kind of got predictable in the second half, Alexander. Well, that's exactly what I said when Montgomery intercepted that ball. It was a just a bubble screen pass out to the end, and he just jumped in front of it. Like, he knew it was coming out there right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the ball was really low, too, and I said, you know, when we were watching it live, that if that ball's chest high, he's gone. He catches it and takes off running for a touchdown. There's no question about it. So he actually had to dive and roll to catch it. So it was a really good catch, you know, because the throw was low. But I was impressed. I mean, it started out, and that's the thing. Like, we got down 20-6, and it's like, okay, well, this is the same thing that happens every week. Sometimes we come out of it, sometimes we don't. So I wasn't super worried because I felt like, you know, we could beat a team like Alexander.
Yeah.
And like you said, it was the Harris and Mark show.
Yeah.
So I felt like if we could contain them, which I think we did big time in the second half.
Yeah.
Harris, I would like to see a breakdown of Harris's stats from first half to second half, because in the second half, he was just shut down.
Oh, he was.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
All of them were, but, I mean, Mark still got his yards because he was so elusive when he gets out in space, and that's a lot of times his success was running on the outside, which we did. You know, we did do a better job of that in the second half, but really no big plays by Alexander, you know, just a few big runs. Defensively, we've been waiting for him to step up, and they really did this week, and hopefully, you know, they can continue to do that the rest of the season because we'll get into it later, but we got a lot to play for still. So
yeah, we do, and again, the meat of the schedule is over. You know, I mean, I won't say over. I mean, we still got some good games to play, but obviously, them first five games were brutal, and we knew it. So let me ask you, Dusty, because I know you, like I said, you know, Dusty's been coaching defenses now for what, 12, 13 years, I think. So
for a little while.
Yeah, we're a long time. He's coached from the high school level all the way down through it. And I know at the first, I mean, we both, you know, all three of us watched this team really close. I know the last couple of weeks, you know, you've kind of tried to go up and give a little bit of advice or whatever, help out what you can. The defense appears to be, and I know we've talked about this, me and Nathan, on every show, and we're always like, the defense just needs to make plays. We don't need an awesome defense. We need a defense that can make plays. We just need a defense that can slow them down, that can stop them. And we're seeing a little bit of growth out of them. They're getting a little bit better every week. They're getting more in the backfield. They're making plays. What have you seen in the last 2 weeks that makes you think, and again, I'll throw Athens out the door here, I guess, but even last week and against Meigs, they kind of stepped up when they had to and made plays. And now that you've seen them a little bit, how are you feeling about the defense and the maturity and the growth they're going through? Because I know it's a lot of young players.
Well, I'd say you said it yourself right there. One thing is confidence. The other thing is growth.
Yeah.
Because after kids get used for a period of time, they actually know what to do, what assignments to do, and what to look for, and how to react for this, especially for fakes. Like you were bringing up earlier, the Athens game, that fake kept on killing us and stuff.
Yeah.
It really did. And our defense lineman was blocking down. They was staying high, and they was just getting blocked down easily. Now, this game, they actually look like they was bull rushing the whole time. But there was a couple times that you seen the defense line. I remember two series, it was like every defense lineman just literally stopped about 2 yards and looked up. Huh. And the ball was going out, but they didn't really get real too deep or anything because first quarter, they was getting too deep. I heard Coach Dunn, heard Coach Olson yell at them stuff. Hey, you guys, too deep, too deep, too deep.
They adjusted.
They adjusted. That's the biggest thing. Now you get to linebackers. You got a real smart linebacker crew with Caden Montgomery, Hunter Nichols and stuff, especially Caden Montgomery.
Yeah.
You was talking earlier, Nate, about that interception. Now the conditions of that field, how he picked that ball off and how he jumped that route is just crazy, to be honest, because even in the dry field, someone pick that ball off is just good reaction. But in a wet conditions, that's just amazing. Defense linemen, at the get-go, you seen they had – I think we jumped off sides a couple times.
Yeah.
And then you started seeing our defense linemen really firing off the ball really, really slow. They was afraid of slipping.
Yeah.
So me and Coach Dunn took him to the side and stuff. I said, hey, you got to act like a sprinter. Dig like a little divot there, test it out and everything, shorten your stance. You got to shorten your stance. Casey Collins had way too big of a stance. We had to shorten that some and made him dig like a little ditch and fire through. Then they was more confident about firing off the ball.
Yeah.
Because you had some of them scooting back. But the smarts of the linebacker, especially Caden Montgomery and Hunter Nichols especially, is that they can pick up stuff so quick.
Yep.
Like I stated earlier, I heard Coach Dunn actually yell at the linebackers because he's trying to call something in. Here they are looking offense coordinator. seeing what they was calling. I thought that was awesome. I'm sitting there laughing because Coach Dunn's trying to get a play in. Here I am telling these guys, hey, this is what this means, this is what this means. And here they are reading this, and Coach Dunn's yelling at them. So I scoot away from him and just started laughing because I know I kind of caused that. But
that's awesome. And I think, too, and I think Antonio was playing a lot of the other outside linebacker spot this week, right?
He's actually playing DT. Actually be a DN. He was actually going in the B gap.
Okay, because he I mean, and really, and I know he'd been out for 3 weeks, but he looked like fresh legs and on a mission. Oh, I mean, he was really going after it, too, there. So that was, like I said, it was good to see the whole front seven, and I think this is the best game the front seven's had.
Oh, for sure.
And I've said, you know, every week, I think that the secondary's been playing a little bit better than the front seven. And, again, they've all made mistakes here and there, you know, but that front seven was solid this week. I mean, they did well. They adjusted. They made good plays, and we shut them down in the second half. That was
right.
Yeah. That was an awesome job. The defense deserves credit for that. So
Tony Mendez, he made one heck of a play. It was a sweep or something. Even though it was one of those good mess-ups, even though he's supposed to want to B-gap, he's seen that guy come in motion. He took like a step like he's going B-gap. The guy shot down, blocked him. He threw him down, made a tackle right there for a loss. I remember that. It happened right there on the sideline. Yeah. That was a great play.
It was a good job. So. Okay, I think we could probably wrap up the Alexander game. How are you guys feeling about it?
Sounds good.
We'll wrap this one up, and we'll get moving on to the TVC review I think we have next.
TVC review.
So, all right, and like I said, it was an awesome win.
Welcome back to episode 7.1 of the Viking Red Zone Podcast. It's time for the One Tactical Uniforms and Supplies TVC review. And what a week. What a week it was. Some crazy things happened this week.
Yeah.
In the league. Pretty crazy.
I think it kind of shows that the TVC is not a clear-cut front runner right now for the championship is what this shows.
I don't know. There might be one.
You want to go ahead and do the records for the week real quick while we're
yeah. What started? What did you do last week, Lugs?
Well, could have been better. Could have been better. 2-4 is not bad. Okay, Vic and Kelly's 2-4, man, and I'm 2-4. I'm riding out my team.
All right.
So 2-4. Of course, what did you do?
3-3.
And Ryan Stewart went 4-2.
Yeah, and I thought he was going to go like 0-6.
Yeah, no really kidding. Did. Oh, he was talking some smack at the flag football practice.
Was he?
Yeah, he knew he had it. He knew it. And the college games hadn't even been played yet.
And he was already talking.
He was already talking smack. So,
If he's talking smack to you, all you got to do is say, just talk
14
about.
14 interceptions?
No,
call him Wee-Wee.
Wee-Wee, there we go.
Just ask him what happened during the Galpless game his junior year.
Okay.
When he was playing cornerback.
I'm sure he's listening to this, probably calling you a couple choice words right now.
Probably. Yeah, I remember that. I was actually coaching him then.
There you go. Look, Dusty's even red-faced right now, isn't he? Oh, this must have been a good one. Okay.
All right. So let's dive in here. We're going to start with the Nelsonville York and Meigs game. Nelsonville York beat Meigs 47-6. The Buckeyes are 4-2 after starting the year 1-2. They're now 4-2, and Meigs 3-3 as they lose to the Buckeyes at Nelsonville. And it's kind of like they just lost Coach Boston Sr., and Meigs comes into Nelsonville to play a game, and it's just like, you know, they're not going to lose this game at all, so.
Yeah.
I mean, they had the emotion was there, and, you know, they had more than just, you know, a TVC title to play for, so.
And Meigs, actually, they lost their left tackle early in the game to a broken ankle, and they lost Hinton, their backup quarterback.
Really?
Went out of the game in the second quarter. Yeah, so.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they were going to get beat anyway, probably, but, I mean, you lose those two players, and all of a sudden it's really downhill for them.
And Hinton was, he's looked okay against us, I thought, and then really picked it up, you know, last week against River Valley. So
They actually benched – Alex Mount was just destroying Megs, by the way.
Right.
They actually benched him in the second quarter of that game and didn't play him much after that. And he still – I think – I know he had some big-time yardage. I don't know his exact yardage, but – and I talked to a guy from Megs who told me Hunter Edwards is flat-out fast. That was his exact words
to
me.
Yeah, that's what my Nelsonville people are saying.
Yeah.
He said he is very quick.
Yeah.
Quick.
They said he can run, and he said he was impressive. But I think if they'd have played Alex Mount, he would have just lit it up even more.
Mount had 139.
Yeah, and again, that's a quarter and a half a play, 139 yards.
That's not bad.
Yeah. So Megs is, I mean, you know, Megs has definitely had a rough year.
They were beat up, but now they're really beat up because they have is it a freshman or a sophomore?
I believe.
Whoever starts for their JV, I think, is who's playing now.
Yeah, and
that quarterback.
They're going to third on the depth chart. So,
yeah,
that's a rough one. So, yeah, good win for Nelsonville, though. I mean, that really makes it I think they're where they need to be right now. They're making the run. You know, they're
2-0 in the league.
2-0 in the league.
They've won three straight games. They've won three straight games by scores of 47-6, 35-0, 46-6.
Maybe they got their eyes on Athens when we're going to sneak one in on them here.
Well, I'll tell you what, a big game coming up this Friday is they go to Wellston.
Yeah.
Now, which team going to show up there?
Yeah.
That either could be a game or it could be a blowout, you know. So
we'll find out on our rapid fire predictions. So
we will. We will.
We'll find it out.
Yeah. So okay. Now let's do the. Well, let's see here. I wanted to save the two shockers for last. Well, I'll just throw these scores out there. Michigan beats Wisconsin 14-7, which. I believe I got that right.
I believe you did get that one right.
You guys got it wrong.
But I think it was much closer than you thought it was going to be.
It was. It was closer.
By the way, that's a funny story, Dusty. When we started doing the rapid fire predictions with Ryan, he's kind of conservative all the way through the TVC. And when we start saying, okay, Wisconsin and Michigan, he stands up and he blurts out stuff I've never heard Kirk Herbstreit talk like that. he's all of a sudden he's a pro. All of a sudden he knew everything once he got and he missed the pick. I just want to point that out.
He did miss the pick. But remember he said that after he picked it that he wished that he didn't because he really thought Michigan was gonna win after he thought about it for a minute. So I'll give him credit for that.
Okay, we'll give him a little bit of credit.
A little bit of credit for that.
Loss is a loss.
So. It is, but still. Yeah. And Clemson, man, I thought I had that one in the bag.
That was a good game.
Clemson beats Louisville 42-36 at Clemson.
I personally, and I don't know, did you even watch the game, Dusty? Did you even watch the college football much?
I watched a little bit of it, not too much. I was about there, little bikes.
Well, that first quarter looked like it looked like it was a high school team going up against a college team. Clemson was beating on them we beat on Alexander this week and like we beat on Megs. And I said it to my Megs buddy right there on the air. You got your butts handed to you by us, and that's what Clemson was doing. It was a manhandle. I was sitting there thinking Louisville's going to get killed by 40. Somehow they got back in it.
They made a game out of it.
So it's a good game to watch. It's a great game to watch if you missed it. But.
Okay, so we will go to the final two games of the week. River Valley. Is it an upset? Would you say it's an upset over Wellston?
I wouldn't say it's an upset because it was at River Valley. But I didn't see it coming. I'm just telling you. Wellston is the Jekyll and Hyde of the TVC right now.
It's every other week.
Yeah. One bad week, one good week. Lose to an average team, beat a good team.
Would think a rainy, soggy night would help Wellston.
Yeah, because they're just a big bunch of hard-mollies, man.
River Valley's a spread team. They like to throw the ball, and Wellston likes to ground and pound, and you would think that they would have worked out for them, but it didn't, obviously.
Yeah, big win for River Valley. I mean, honestly, they were on that teeter of sliding down, you know, pretty bad.
They were on a
two-game losing streak, correct? So
they lost two in a row.
They got their win back. They're 4-2. They're 1-1. Are they 1-2 in the TVC?
They're 1-2 in the TVC, and they have Alexander this week in Albany. So that'll be a pretty good game, I think. I think that could be another.
So it lets them stay in the hunt, you know. I mean, they're right there at it now. So, I mean, yeah, it's a big win.
Two losses, I think it's safe to say that they're not going to win the title, but they could finish in the top three. And I think that's everybody, you know, wants to finish at least in the upper half of the league if they can win it.
Exactly.
So
Yeah.
They still got some stuff to – and they still could go 8-2. I mean, if they went out, you know, that'd get them in the playoffs. So they still have that to play for.
That's right. Yep.
So, right, and the last game from last week and the game that – I don't think anybody outside
How did this
of
one happen?
Outside of the Logan area, the Hawkin County area, predicted. Man, I don't know how it happened, but Logan beat Athens 31-30. Yeah. I know Athens and Logan don't like each other. There's a big rivalry when they were in the SUAL, and the last time Athens had beaten Logan was in 1990. And
wow,
it, you know, it's been a while.
Huh.
And but Logan comes into the game 0-5.
And hardly scored, by the way.
Only scored in two games.
And I don't think they ever put up 31,
oh,
right?
No, they scored 19 was the most they scored in a game, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
They scored 19 and I think 13 or 14 in another game. And they had they were shut out three times. And granted, they've played a tough schedule, and we've mentioned that. But last week, they get shut out by Nelsonville York 35-0.
Yeah.
So we're thinking, okay, well, Athens is probably on par with the Buckeyes, so they'll probably win by close to the same margin, especially after what they just did to us.
Yeah.
Which, how much of it was them and how much of it was us, you know, just playing bad last week. But I didn't see it coming. I was shocked when I saw that. I really was. I always root for the TVC when they're playing non-conference opponents. But, man, that was just a head-scratcher.
It was. It definitely was. I was shocked by it. And obviously, you know, we kind of think Athens is going to win. I thought Athens was going to win the TVC. And then you see this now, and all of a sudden it's all in a quandary again. You know, who's going to do what? You know, I mean, it's really crazy to think that.
The only positive for the Bulldogs is if they had obviously they had to have had a bad game. And it's good that they had it during this game.
A non-conference game.
It doesn't count against against the league record. So.
Yep, that's right.
I guess that's the only positive you can have out of it. But, man, that's crazy. Everybody from Athens thought they were going to go up there and get the first win since 1990, and they were all jacked up because they hate Logan. And
didn't happen.
Man, they got sent back down 33 with their tails between their legs. That's rough.
It's going to be interesting to see what Athens does this week.
Yeah, they have – who do they have this week? Athens has Megs. So, boy, I feel sorry for Megs because they're probably going to be mad. And Megs is all beat up. So.
Megs is definitely beat up. There are six major players hurt on their roster right now. Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe one of the top, well, definitely one of the top five players in the league.
Yeah, probably top three players in the league, to be honest. Yeah.
Right.
That's just like a puzzle then. When you got that many people hurt, all you're trying to do is just put pieces inside there trying to figure out what your best combination is.
And when you're 3-3, it's probably – I mean, and you hate to say, no one ever wants to think this happens, but it does. You're probably really thinking, okay, what kids can I develop younger now that can help me out next year? You know what I mean? It's pretty much over for the seniors, right?
Well, so. And here's one thing that makes it even worse for Megs is they have Athens this week.
Then they have Jackson.
And then they have to go to Jackson and play.
Now, Jackson is kind of struggling for Jackson. For Jackson, they're struggling anyway. I mean, just say that. But, I mean, Megs is not going to beat him, obviously.
Well,
but
if a 64-13 win over Warren's struggling, I'd take that any year.
Well, Warren's bad.
Yeah, but Warren's won two games.
Well, they're who did they play against?
Well, the Oak Glen, West Virginia was one of them.
And we know nothing about. So, I mean, they could have a population of 30.
And they beat Bealsville, which is 0-6, and they have lost – Man, their scores, they got to be bad.
So there you go. So, you're right. It doesn't get any easier for Megs, definitely.
Well, here's the thing. Let me look at this. Okay. This is kind of off track because it's kind of – I'm talking about Jackson here. But this is one thing to point out. Jackson beat Warren last week. They play Logan this week. If they win this week, then they win the SEO championship at 2-0 in the league, and will be the final
champion of the SEO.
So they will be forevermore the Southeastern Ohio Athletic League champions in football.
Well, we know one friend that'll be super happy with that.
Yeah, and if they lose to Logan, I guess the Athens loss doesn't look too bad.
That's right.
I don't see that happening though.
Maybe Logan got it together, man. I mean.
Lose 35-0 to Nelsonville and then turn around and beat Athens.
It's your wake up call. That's your wake up call, man.
I guess it's more of a mental thing than you could imagine.
Yep.
So that's it. One Tactical Uniforms and Supplies CBC review. We will come back next with our interview of the week segment with Mr. Ward.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Viking Red Zone Podcast, brought to you by J&K Contracting. One call, we do it all, 698-3521. And it's time for our special guest segment with Dusty Lugs. You got some stats on him if you want to read those.
Yeah, just give a little background here on Dusty.
Did you make this stuff up? I haven't seen the stats you better read.
No, so I did not make it up. I'll tell you how I got this stuff. I spent about 5 months grabbing newspapers from every single year and calculating every game for every year for the last, since 1990. And I couldn't get 2000, 2001, 2003, and 2005, I think, so I couldn't get. But every other year, and I got some of the games, it's not all of them, because the paper sucked in the 2000s. And I'm just telling you now, Vinton County Courier, stop doing it. Put that crap in the paper. So, but literally, we
just
went through
about that.
How you really feel?
Yeah. I was annoying. I was like, why did they cover us every game? But they didn't. I don't think we had a statistician at certain points, but which is why I try to do stats, because I want a history record of everything right now, you know, so I try to do the stuff a little bit better. But so I went through it and got all the stats for. So, and again, the Book of Bowler is amazing. And I did took me months. And what I did is nothing like what he did. I mean, the work he put into that's absolutely astonishing. For all 50 years that he done it, that's great. So, but I used his book some to get some stats too. But from the 90s on, I'm pretty accurate on everything. So I can pretty much say from the 90s on, I got pretty much everything that matters. Because them few years I didn't get, the reason I didn't get them because they wasn't very good teams. So the paper didn't cover them as much. So, right? I mean, 4 was a playoff year, but the years before that were a little rough. And
4 was probably, yeah, 4 was pretty
and
good.
And every game's in there for 2004.
4 would have been 91.
Yeah, but then 2002 and 1, it's like nothing. So I'm like, really? Come on, man. 2000 had nothing. It's like after 99, they were like, football don't matter. So it's like what the paper said. So, we're going to lose that sponsorship if we had them, wouldn't we? So, okay, anyway, so these stats should be pretty legit, but I wouldn't, if somebody had a gun to my head, I wouldn't say they're totally legit. I'm just telling you, these are
pretty
close. Definitely close, yeah. I guess anyway, so Dusty is this year's junior high coach, primarily the defensive coach for the 7th and 8th grade. He has coached high school defenses for years, a lot of experience. Played in the 93 playoff team. He played in the playoffs with them. The only time he ever won a playoff game ever. Easily the second best team Vinton County's ever had after the 91 undefeated team.
Yeah,
so,
right.
See, he plugged the Browns. I'm plugging the 10-0 team. What'd you say? So, anyway, yeah. So, anyway, just a few records here just to let you know. Dusty was a wide receiver for us and defensive back, I believe, right? So,
yeah.
Defensive back. So, really, I mean, if you want to nail down the top three wide receivers Vinton County's ever had, it's always, you know, an argument between Ryan Cottle, Sean Speakman, and Dusty Ward. I mean, that's who it is. And then you throw Dustin in there, obviously, but he's a tight end. So these three toggle all over the place on career stats. But anyway, career stats for an entire career on Vinton County. Dusty is second with 856 yards receiving. First place is a guy from 1966. Can't remember his name. He is third in passing touchdowns with 10. Actually had 7 in one season, I think. So, 8 in one season. He is first in average yards per catch. You didn't know that. 25.94 yards per catch Dusty had in his career.
That's prior.
I got to say one thing right now. That wasn't me. That was all Andy Booth. But he was.
And again, he's always humble. You know, that's Dusty too.
He really was.
He was. He was a good quarterback. But again, every quarterback has a good wide receiver, you know. So, I mean, you know, you look at Doug Lass, he had a great year when Ryan Cottle was a senior. You know, you look at Tommy Reed, he had a great passing year with Sean Speakman. So, I think you need two people. You know, I think a good quarterback needs a good wide receiver, too. So, I mean, don't sell yourself short. You were good. So, as a season, you were third in receiving yards in one season with 590 yards. First in receiving touchdowns with 8 touchdowns in a season. So, you hold the record for most touchdowns ever in a single season by a wide receiver, which is absolutely awesome. So, and in single game records, You were third in receiving yards in a single game, 157 yards in one game against Belpre in 1993. And I wanted to ask you, do you even remember that game?
No.
You don't remember that game at all?
No,
see?
Not at all.
So, we're old. Game we
was,
can't remember
it. Was at Belpre.
Was it at Belpre?
It was at Belpre.
Wow. See, he knows everything, man. It's crazy. So, 157 yards receiving in one game. That is impressive, man. So anyways, just want to give a little bit of a background to Dusty Ward here before we get into Tim talking about the junior high. I'm going to hand things back over to Nathan here. We'll let Nathan talk to him about some things, but just letting everybody know, you know, the credentials, where he comes from, and then we'll get into the junior high and a little bit about the high school and stuff. So,
okay, well, I am a big history nerd, especially when it comes to the 90s teams. So the first question I want to ask you is, like, from the 93 season, just pick out, like, one or two things that you remember most about that. Anything about that year?
I would actually say I had to give my props to Jack O'Rourke. That's probably the first year that we actually lifted as we did. I mean, the whole team was inside there. I think when we graduated, we had like 35 kids on the team, if even that. But we was every single one of us inside there working. I mean, we was working our butt off. It really was. You had mostly, I said his name earlier, but mostly Andy Booth pushing us the hardest and stuff, and he was a great motivator back then. That's one thing I do remember about that team. Plus, my God, they're humongous. Our littlest guy was John Wells, but he also started his sophomore year as a guard, and he was really good. But, my God, we had some big offense linemen.
Actually, I don't think he started, but I think he played a lot.
Yeah, he might have played a lot.
Him and Kevin Barnett would toggle a little bit back and forth at guard.
But he was the smallest guy, and he was exceptional.
Yeah, yeah, but great player. Ended up being an all-state player as a senior. So, yeah,
he's really good player. Wow. Cool. But the biggest thing back in is the fakes. You throw a fake, right. Anybody do a fake, stuff like that, and they throw me the ball. It didn't matter if they had me double-teamed or whatever. As soon as you throw a fake inside there, somehow, some way, Andy Booth gets the ball to me.
And Dusty was like a and him and Ryan Cottle was a heck of a wide receiver, and I take nothing away from Ryan. Ryan's great.
No,
I mean, you
awesome.
Can argue he's one of the better ones. But Dusty and Sean Speakman were clones of each other. And I don't know if you remember Sean, because I think he was a senior, I believe, before you got in there. But
he's my neighbor. He's our neighbor growing up.
He was your neighbor growing up. That's right. Yeah. So you didn't play with him in football.
No, of course not.
But Sean was a crazy leaper, like a crazy, spectacular catch kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And I remember Dusty being the same way. I remember Dusty, there'd be balls thrown in the air, and there'd be a guy hanging on Dusty, and Dusty would just go through the air and catch some crazy catch that you didn't even know was coming. It was really amazing to watch him play. So really cool things I remember about the 93 year. And you talked about the off season. Me and Jimmy Saunders coached the freshman that year. So I was there during the off seasons, and I remember the rubber bands and the weights. And I remember after they lifted weights, it was out on the football field for hours working with rubber bands and speed and everything. And then we were yanking people across the place. And I don't know, do you remember the one kid from Chillicothe who tried
That's
to come out for
exactly
the team?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Actually, yeah. He actually was hooked up to, I think, Scott Braden.
It was actually Jeff Hammond.
Was it Jeff Hammond?
Jeff Hammond was there and raiding with the rubber bands.
Yeah,
and
he went to pull him.
Yeah.
We always stretch the band out. You tell the first person to run.
Yeah.
Let him get out there good ways. I forget how far it was.
Yeah.
Then he took like 3-4 steps, and boom, he fell down and started dragging all his face. And this boy was fast, too. I mean, this boy was
this kid
fast.
Was – and the funny thing about this kid is he was supposed to be the SEOAL Player of the Year coming into the season for Chillicothe, I believe, right?
Yes.
And he wanted to come play for us because, I mean, you know, we had Snyder and Jason, and we were loaded, you know?
We were a dynasty. Back.
So he comes down here, and this is a true story. Dusty was here for this. This is insane. He comes down here, he's made it 3 practices, and that third practice, he was doing the rubber bands, and Jeff Hammond, who played with me, and we were there helping the classes coach, Jeff takes off running, and I was there watching the whole thing. Jeff takes off running, and he goes, I don't know, and the funny thing about the bands was, and Dusty, they all did this, but again, you're talking about Dusty and the superior athletes, they would stretch that band out to the point that it almost where it yanks you. And then they would take off, and they did it as a competition to see how far they could go before they'd take off.
Right.
Well, there were a big thing all over the country about them bands snapping and hurting kids, too. You know, so I think they ended up making them things illegal, didn't they, or something?
I don't remember.
But anyway, so we did it, though. They'd stretch it out as far as they could, and most people were fine with it, you know. But it was funny. You'd always drag a limer or something. But Jeff took off on this kid, and this kid, he was supposed to be the fastest kid in the SEOAL. And so Jeff takes off, and Jeff's thinking, I got to haul butt because this kid's quick. So Jeff takes off, and that kid didn't take off quick enough. And when he started, he got drug for 20 yards just skipping down the grass. Am I right?
You're
he
right,
got drug.
Right.
So, now, I could be wrong on Jeff, but I'm pretty sure it was Jeff because I remember we used to laugh about it. Well, what's funny about this is this kid was supposed to still be a contributor for our team. You know, we were thinking, hey, this is going to be a good player for the team. This puts us up there over the edge a little bit.
Yeah.
The next day in practice, we come to practice, and I'm in with the coaches in the locker room, and they're like, the kid quit. And we were like, the kid quit? Why did he quit? And they said he went back to Chillicothe, and he literally told our coach, that is the hardest 3 days of practice I have ever went through in my life, and I'm going back to Chillicothe.
Wow.
And that is exactly what that kid told him, and he quit. The three hardest days of practice he ever went through, and those weren't even our hardest days yet. I think that was still conditioning. 2 days hadn't even started yet. It was only getting worse. So.
That's crazy.
But, yeah, I remember that about that summer, just to say that for the 93 class. And, again, you know, I know we always I always pick with the 93 class versus my class. They're a great class. It was a fun class to coach, and the kids were good. So it was awesome. So.
I have a funny story with that. I'll piggyback off that. I used to take his bands home. You know where Miss Prater, Nolan Yates' grandma used to live?
I do not.
A couple of houses down from me, right there on Engle Drive. I used to tie it up to the tree. Stretch it all the way to my house is like 2 or 3 yards over and run. That's what I was doing. I run right there by a tree. So my sister come out one time and she wanted to try it. So I hooked her up to it. I stretched her all the way back here. She took 2 steps and I think drug her about 40 yards. She had a grass stain on her face for 3 days. I got beat with a broom by my mom. I got beat with, I think she was cooking too when I was walking. Oh, I got beat so bad.
Terry Lynn, right? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, see, that's awesome though. Yeah. I remember the rubber band. Like I said, that was a big thing back when we were in school, and we don't see them a lot now though, you know, but I mean, that was a, and that's like I say, and everybody talks about their 40 times and their speed. We went through 91, 92, 93, and I think even 94, which is the year you graduated. And you could put a dozen kids running under 5 flats in every class. You know, it was just – it was – and we were big boys, though. We were known as a big team. But we also had speed. I mean, I guarantee you, I don't know if Dusty even knows what his official time was, but it would have competed with anybody. I mean, he was as fast as anybody had to face. Right. So
fast I ever ran was 4 or 5 in college.
Which is insane.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I would have took that. So yeah.
So what grade were you in 93 on the 93 team?
Junior.
You were a junior.
Yeah.
Okay, so you'll be able to give me a good answer here because Lugs can't.
I had a lot of concussions.
Well, no.
I mean a lot.
This isn't going to be too hard.
He was a headhunter on defense.
My question is everybody knows that prior to 93, you know, we kind of played a JV schedule.
Oh, I agree with that 100%.
And oh,
let me give
you
another fact there. You know, everyone who I played with in 93, like Andy Booth, Jason Snyder, Scott Braden, John Wells, you know they actually all played on that team that went 10-0.
None of them played.
Okay, well, here's my question.
Right, hold on. Right, let's not skip this.
It's
me
and Nate right here talking. Just wait a second.
the grown-ups are talking. Let me step aside. Go ahead.
The question is, obviously – your guys' 10-0 year wasn't good enough to get to the playoffs.
No.
Right?
No.
Okay. And I think that kind of – a lot of people from maybe outside of the area, maybe even people from here don't know this, but I've talked to Jack a lot over the last couple of years, and that was kind of what kind of got the ball rolling on splitting the TBC up into two divisions.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. Yep.
Because if we go 10-0 and we can't make the playoffs, then that's kind of holding us back. So we need to be able to schedule non-league teams. Nothing against Miller and Fed Hawk, which we play this week, or those are small teams. You know, nothing against them.
Yeah.
It's just we needed to be able to go out and schedule teams a little bit bigger because back in the day, we were all the same size. 20 years later, things change. Mm-hmm. And so we were kind of held back a little bit. And I'm picking fun at you because I always do, Lugs.
This is always something that happens. It's all fun for me. So
and I've talked to a lot of people about this. Back when you coached in the mid-2000s with Nolan, I think that when the year we played Jackson, Waverly, Galpolis, Memphard, I think, one of those years, all really, really good teams.
Which Memphard was making the playoffs
back then. And so was Waverly. I think Waverly might have been the best of those teams.
Yeah,
we
actually had, Walls, who went to New Mexico, and we had
Derek Roback.
Yeah, Derek Roback.
Who went to Notre Dame and then transferred to High University.
Yeah. tight end.
So, anyways, what I'm saying is I always have the debate with people of what was the toughest schedule, you know, in the history of our school. And obviously, it wasn't any schedule before 93, okay?
Can I just say that while we're going on this? Okay, 63-0 to Alexander, 56-0 to Trimble. I mean, yeah, you're playing weaker teams, but you're killing them. And Nelsonville was still Nelsonville regardless, which, by the way, we need to ask Dusty a question on the radio about Nelsonville 93, but we'll ask him that in a minute. So, but and I've asked him this before,
you got to get your pig back in.
But Belpre was still Belpre back then. Belpre was still a heck of a school back then.
Yeah.
It's not like we didn't beat anybody good.
I'm not saying
six
that.
Of the teams we played were Hill Jacks, but we beat them like they were Hill Jacks, okay?
I think what Nate's trying to say is that your team actually opened up to make the schedule a lot tougher.
Yeah.
And we took the hit to pave the way.
Yeah.
And AD and Jack Ward seeing that we're going to have a better team, so he made a lot tougher schedule. The bad thing about it, we kept that schedule for years.
Then, when
we lost the talent level and stuff, and that's what killed us.
Yeah.
That's what killed program. That's what killed football for a while, I think.
Yeah.
I would give you guys credit. Yeah. I would give you guys credit for, and especially Jack, for spearheading the split of the TBC.
Yeah.
I will give us 100% credit of that. So, and that's because of what happened there. Because I talked to Jack. Jack was like, yeah, we were in 91, we were really good, and I remember we didn't make it, and we go watch these playoff games. We went to the state and watched the state games, and I'm thinking, me and my coaches are looking at each other like, we could beat these teams, but we're not allowed to play because of our schedule, and it's not our fault. But anyways, what I'm saying is what was the mindset from going from 92 to 93, knowing that instead of Miller, you're playing Portsmouth. You know, instead of Fed Hawk, you're playing
Jackson
or Philo or Watkins. You know,
and didn't we also drop to D3 also in 93? And that's the year we went to D3 instead of D2.
Yeah,
D3. Yeah, so we dropped it because I was with the work when he was trying to make that happen.
So what was the mindset though going into the season, knowing that it's not these teams anymore? I mean, we're playing the big guys now. We're playing the real deal. This is as good as it gets.
And be honest. That's what actually motivated us in the weight room a lot back then, is that we had to play those tougher teams.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it really was. Our bondship, all of us was always together. I mean, every one of us was together back in 93. We was just all together. I mean, mm-hmm. we was always hanging out and everything else. But you went to the teams and stuff, and each game, we always felt that we was the best. And it was something that back in Luggs' days actually carried to the 93 is that when the offense lineman, I feel games wins at offense lineman for offense.
Right, right.
Is that they was actually telling them the plays. That was the crazy thing about it, because I remember Jason and Bucky back here. Snyder didn't care. Is that, hey, the ball's coming right here. They came right to the lines. Hey, the ball's coming right here. And they get so mad. They'd be so ticked off and everything else, I'd just be laughing. Because I ain't got the ball thrown to me like four times a game, I'd be laughing.
Yeah,
so
that's why I had 44 yards of carry.
Right.
You only got three times a game,
but it was fun. I'll never forget it. Portsmouth game, that was a blast down there playing that stadium. That was a beautiful stadium.
Yeah, that was cool. So yeah, the Ironton game was just insane.
That was cool at the same field, right? Spartan Stadium.
Is that same field? That
was Municipal Spartan.
I can't remember. Memorial. Anything I remember about the Ironton game is that when we was warming up, you had literally fans. I mean, people our ages standing on the sidelines right there by the field goal post where we was warming up, had their shirts off, painted, said, "You guys never played a team like this." I mean, just dogging us big time. And at the end of the game, all those people was standing there. They made like a tunnel and shook our hands.
Really?
I'll never forget that.
Wow, that is awesome.
That was pretty cool then.
That's awesome. You guys dang near pulled that one out.
Well, that would have been insane too, right? And then Ironton ended up getting second in the
Ironton
state.
Ironton cruises the next round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, for those anybody out there that cares or gets as excited as I do about this kind of stuff, for the majority of the 90s, if you go to the library, and I think it's upstairs now that they renovated, there's a Vinton County room is what they call it, I think. And you can go in there and you can look at all the yearbooks and stuff. Well, somebody has put together scrapbooks from every year.
Tom Reed done it.
Okay.
And donated it all to them.
Right. Okay. Well, there's scrapbooks up there, and I've went through and I've read every freaking article about the 93 team, and there was a bunch of them back then.
Impressive.
It wasn't just from our paper. It was from a lot of papers. And it's all in these scrapbooks, and it is so cool to go back and look, see quotes from before pre-games and post-games and watch the playoff, you know, hunt. And then when you guys dropped the Nelsonville game, it was like, okay, well, are we going to make it now? You know, because we ended up getting the four seed with a 9-1 record, which was all they took back then, was the top four.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to look at, you know, and the 91 team, you know, you can go back and look at it too. So,
and he did an awesome job. I didn't even know he did all that.
I didn't know he did it either.
I knew Meat my whole life, you know, knew Tom Reed. And then when I was doing these stats and stuff, you know, one of my friends was like, oh, Tom just donated all this stuff to the school.
That's cool.
That's where I got a lot of my stats, because he had every single game, every single paper. And he had Athens and Vinton County and any other papers, and all of them are, they're all up there, and they're all donated for people to view and check out. So,
yeah, it's really cool.
It is. It's really awesome.
It is.
And the talk on one thing, too, you were talking about, you know, the plays and everybody knowing it, and I know that it was this way with your class. And this is just a testament to how good the talent was back when we played. And I'm going through the whole O'Rourke era from 90 to 91 to 92 to 93 to 94. Mm-hmm. When we played after the first year, and most people have no clue of this, but we know it, people caught on to our cadences. They caught on to our plays. Every team knew it. And we never changed it. We would literally line up. And it happened against Nelsonville and Alexander, and it blatantly, they knew all of our plays, and which it didn't matter with Alexander. They were horrible then. But Nelsonville would come up to the line, and we'd call play, and they'd be like, the play's going right here. And it didn't matter. You know, you if you executed right in that offense, it didn't matter if they knew the plays. And I think it was the same way in 93, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
it was.
You would get to the line, and they would just holler your play out, and you'd be like, those little turds know our play. And they'd know it. And we had different ways of disguising the cadences, because we had NFL team names for the numbers and stuff, too. So our cadences were pretty cool the way we could do it. But still, a lot of times, they nailed it. They knew the names. We had a Cincinnati for a play, and then we had 123. So if we would say 123 but tried to hide it with Cincinnati, they still knew Cincinnati was 123 because they'd been hearing it for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And even worse for 93 because they'd heard it even 2 years longer than they did with us, and it was still the same cadences, and they still couldn't stop the plays.
Well, one thing that Jack told me a couple years ago when we talked was the 93 team, he said, was the first team that had started the seventh grade and went the entire cycle of this offense that you guys ran back in the day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he said that the 93 team, and he didn't say anything bad about anybody, and I tried to get which team was his favorite, but he wouldn't answer it. But
oh, I'm sure it's 93, Coach. I'm sure it's 93.
But he said, you know, these guys could run this system in their sleep. And a lot of games we played, we weren't more athletic. We didn't have as the most talent. It was the fact that we ran it, and we ran it perfect, and we ran it every time, and that's exactly how we won these games.
Yeah. And what Dusty said is right. Andy Booth, and I would probably, you could rank these quarterbacks in so many different ways between Chris Bethel and Ryan Stewart and Tommy Reed and Andy Booth. And Andy Booth is probably the best play fake quarterback I have ever seen. I mean, he could hide the ball. He could run well with it. You didn't know where it was coming from.
Yep.
You didn't know if he's passing it or throwing it. His elusiveness was amazing. So,
yeah, there's always a couple of plays watching film and stuff.
Where even the cameras would get lost.
Oh, yeah,
the cameras
would get lost and stuff.
Yeah, my brother was doing the camera that year, so I know that. So, yeah. I remember that.
Okay, well, we could go on all week about this.
Oh, yeah,
Let's go ahead, and you can talk about the junior high, and then we'll wrap this segment up because this is probably getting pretty long.
Hey, it's a great history lesson. I like this.
It's kind of cool. We could have an entire week's show based on just
we never know where it's going with our guests, and it's kind of cool it went this way. I'm glad we talked a little bit about the 90s because we haven't done that yet on the podcast.
No, we haven't.
It's great.
Except for the 91 mentions quite a bit. So,
Go over,
you know, what you do with the junior high and how it's going this year and what you got left.
Well, first I got to give my hats off to Dan Ramsey. He's a real good coach, head coach. He brings all the kids inside there. He's very good. I think I heard a broadcast a couple weeks ago. We take the kids to Cincinnati camp. We did that twice. That was awesome.
Yeah, Ryan said something about that last week.
We took them to OU. That was really fun, too. It's just kind of nerve-wracking a little bit watching 50 kids run around and trying to babysit them and everything. But it's still fun. But my whole part of it is mostly defense. That's where my heart's always been. I teach the kids, especially the defense linemen, I really work with them a lot because I always like a different front. Mm-hmm. I like to run a 40 or 50 front, move the guys around, different techniques and stuff. Even the little Vikes game last night when I went to go watch, I had a couple little youth kids right there, and I tell them, all right, what's why are they lined up wrong? What technique should they be in? And that's stuff they should know. And I tell you one thing right now, some of these kids that are learning this is going to be way above where they know more about defense than some of the high school kids. That's good. What's awesome about it.
That's good.
Yeah. And they can actually adjust to it real easy. And I got to give my hats off to the seventh grade. They really came along a good bit. It all depends on emotion, whatever. They'll call a 4-4, 4-3, or even a 4-2. If I tell them to blitz or run a stun or anything like that, it goes in motion, they'll actually yell, check, 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 take theirself out. But the talent level right now at junior high is exceptional. It really is. We have some big kids. We were talking earlier about this Alexander game. We walked inside there. We looked like giants compared to these kids. I mean, this eighth grade class, they have busted their butt. I'm a witness of it. I've actually had probably four or five, maybe six kids work with me all summer in the weight room. Right. They love it. I just get in texts all the time. Hey, what are you doing? Maybe sometimes I just want to rest and stay home, not call no one. Next thing I know, I get a phone call. Hey, we lifting today? Yeah, I guess. Let's go. But these kids' hearts really into it. And the best thing about it is that it actually brings it back to the 90 series and stuff. Now you have all these parents who stayed in town and stuff.
Exactly.
Now you have all their kids actually stay inside here. Their parents always said football this, football that, and their heart's into it like ours was back in the day.
Right.
Yeah.
Talent-wise, you got so much talent, it's ridiculous. Most improved kid I've probably seen in eighth grade level is maybe Timmy McMahon, especially on defense. I guess he hasn't really played much defense for, and this year he's stepped up.
He's done really well this
year. Oh, he's really stepped up. And him and Congreve down there, even Lugs' boy, Boomer, he's just a monster. Sometimes you got to slow him down. He gets mad and starts getting red-faced and stuff.
He gets a little hyper. Yeah.
But I tell you one thing right now, the talent level and stuff, and we have about right around, Lugs, you might be able to correct me, 22 kids?
There's 23 in the 8th grade and 21 in the 7th, which is actually, at one point, I think the 7th had more than the 8th.
Yeah, we actually lost some numbers. Coach Ramsey, especially Coach Ramsey, we both did it this year. But we'll actually start sometime in before school's out this year. We'll start actually conditioning stuff for next year.
Really?
Oh, yeah. We'll have a weight room stuff.
And they work really hard.
Seventh graders will do high reps. Eighth graders stuff will do a little bit lower reps and stuff in the weight room stuff because I'm a firm believer seventh graders don't need to be doing a lot of weight or anything like that.
Right.
It's all about balance.
Yeah.
About balancing the weight and stuff, controlling yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good off-season program for the junior high. And honest with you, I think the junior high probably worked a little harder than the high school did at some stages, especially before the summer started.
Yeah.
I mean, the junior high was, and I remember because Boomer was in track, and you had to, there were times you're doing track practice and you're leaving track practice and you're doing football practice. You know?
Oh, yeah. We averaged, on off-season, we averaged right around 30 kids.
Yeah, it was a good turnout. Off-season. Great
we
turnout.
We really did. We That's teach them. Good. Yeah, you can't really coach much, so you throw the ball out there once in a while. We have fun week every other week, let them throw the ball and stuff.
Well, you guys have 30 in the off season. There's probably a lot of schools around here that don't have 30 in their junior high program
total
during the regular season.
That, too. Oh, yeah, it's hard to schedule them for that very reason because a lot of teams don't have a seventh grade class.
And how much is that going to help out the varsity or the high school program, you know, 2-3 years from now when you've got – that much numbers in just two classes.
Oh.
You know, if they continue to come out and play as the farther they get up, I mean, you're looking at maybe 60, 80 kids on the roster. I mean, that's huge.
And that's what it's all about. That's why we're trying to get the numbers up. And that's why we've always said that, especially looking at Little Vikes, Lugs, you coached Little Vikes for a little while. Because I did probably about 5-6 years or so in Little Vikes too.
Quite a few years.
Is that you'll see some kids mature late. So you'll see some kids actually stay inside their work hard and stuff. And you see they really don't have it yet, maybe in the 4th, 5th grade, maybe not even the 6th grade, but you know their heart's into it. You know sooner or later they're going to hit that mature level. Mm-hmm. So when they get to middle school, they're not quite there yet, maybe their 7th grade year. eighth grade, you might see a little tiny spark. In high school and stuff, when they start maturing, their heart's still in it. That's where you really see a kid develop. And yeah. that's what we're – that's what the Little Vikes, junior high, it is. It's not really for us. It's a more of a personal thing about having a great season and everything else.
Yeah.
But the, to really get the kids inside there, you have to have the kids play a lot. You really do. You have to really sit down and teach the kids X's and O's. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of these kids were at this year, I named one on the top of my head, Zach Radival. I could probably pull him to the side, call defense. Tell me what you see, call defense. And he probably could do that. That's one exceptional thing about that right there, yeah, is that he can actually see his stuff. But he's a little quiet when he gets on the field about yelling, about setting stuff up.
Yeah.
Because how I set the linebackers up is if I have a defense lineman miss line, it's the linebacker's fault.
Right.
Linebacker has to know what DN does, what the DT does. Mm-hmm. Even a nose guard, if we go to 50, they have to know what they're doing.
Right.
And how to hide the coverage. Like if we flare, I'll have them in a two technique, straight up on a guard. If we pinch, I'll have them in a two technique. It all depends if it's unbalanced or not. But if they know it's unbalanced, I'll say check one down. What they'll do is say if there's in a two-eye technique, they'll check right to a three technique, outside shoulder of the guard. They'll actually move right into it. And just teaching these kids this philosophy whenever they get to high school will actually help out the high school coaches a lot better if they continue to use the philosophy that we're both using right now.
Right.
But, like the coverage-wise and stuff, the DBs, I hate to say it, you got it, you don't. You got quick hips. That's the bad thing about it is that you get some kids that actually play football, been sitting out for years and stuff.
Yeah.
You can see they're quick and everything else. Oh, he'd be a great DB. He might be fast, but he might not be quick, might not have it in the hips or anything like mm-hmm. that. Might be tunnel vision on a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You have that going on a little bit of high school right now. You'll have the safety or somebody looking straight at the quarterback instead of what the receivers are doing.
Stuff. Right, yeah.
And that's what we're trying to teach the kids. That's what we're really trying to teach kids.
Right.
And I think for the, like you said, with the cornerbacks and the safeties, it's kind of either have it or you don't. And the problem with those guys is if you're a defensive lineman or an end, you can get away with a lot of stuff sometimes, but that it takes one bad play from a corner,
oh, yeah.
and everybody remembers your name.
Well, yeah, you have so much space you got to cover out
yeah.
there.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Stewart, Galpolis. Yeah, I agree with you.
Oh, we went
I
there.
I didn't say it.
We went there, Ryan. There it
oh,
was.
I actually have that film.
Oh,
that
do you really?
In my house, yeah. It's on VHS, but I've got it. Yeah.
But you actually see these kids mature back to junior high. You actually see from day one these kids mature all the way through the season. It's exceptional. It
That's
really
good.
Is. And it's the kids that who wants to know it, too. Because, mm-hmm. like I said, the other night, Lil Vikes had two kids there. And one dad said, hey, go sit with Coach Ward. And he sat right there. What are they doing wrong? What's going on? He's too high. He's not using his hands. That's awesome.
Yep.
It really That's is. Right. Same with offense linemen. I'm always yelling offense linemen. Whenever it's offense, I sit on the other side of the field. So I watch the opponent's defense, and I can watch the offense linemen. That's what I do. I sit there and yell.
Yep.
So, let's see. The season's probably winding down, right, for the junior high? How many games do you have?
Three more games left, right?
Yeah, sure.
River Valley Jackson and
– you're just looking at the next one, right? That's it. That's the next game.
The next game. That's all I care
it's
about.
Jackson. I've got
all
a DVD,
I care about this week.
I got a DVD
week.
I got to give you, by the way. Don't forget. To
yes, but, I know. I was supposed to tell you last week.
So who do we got this week?
We have Jackson this week, doubleheader.
Yeah,
right?
It's going to be a tough game. It really is.
It is.
What days?
Thursday at Jackson.
On Thursday at Jackson.
At 5:30,
doubleheader.
Okay. Yeah.
5:30 at the old Jackson High School field, which is the middle school field.
Which everybody needs to come because I think they put a brand new bleachers.
Oh, they did. There. Yeah, I saw it. I actually drove by over the summer, and it's a lot nicer than the bleachers were
old wooden
before when Jackson
down.
High School was there. So, yeah, they're really nice.
I was kind of scared to sit in them before, man. I was like, this wood looks old. You know,
yeah, it was.
Wood bleachers.
It was, you know, Jackson's been there
good.
For a while. So.
But I think after that we have River Valley.
That's always an interesting game right there.
They lost to Wellston like 36-6. So I can tell you that. They're struggling a little bit this year. But Nelsonville is the final game of the year, and they will be a tough game. So
yes.
You got Jackson and Nelsonville definitely going to be interesting. And you never know with River Valley because you don't know who they're bringing up. So
right. We actually, one thing we did do this year, and we did a 7-on-7. First time in Vinton County history, junior high program.
That was awesome.
Went to a 7-on-7 program in Trimble.
Yeah.
They asked us to come back next year. There's five teams there. And since he talked about Nelsonville is very good inside that 707. So
yeah, and that was cool. And I'm glad you mentioned that. We never mentioned about that with Ryan. And that's another thing that I tried to get. Even we talked about with the Little Vikes and just doing a 5-on-5. And people are like, oh well, geez, you know, you don't want junior high kids to be passing like that. And Little Vikes is too much. But it's like Dusty says, you know, the more you teach these kids those little things, the more they'll get better at it. And we went to that 707, and I thought we did pretty good. I thought it was a good showing.
Yeah. See, we played Nelsonville very first game. We just kind of rusted a little bit.
Yeah.
But after that, we had a real good showing right there. And that's my whole goal at the junior high program. Everything I learn up there in the high school, I try to bring it down to junior high like 707. I know a lot of coaches out there and stuff, and we all set that up. We was actually going to host one this year. Then I had two teams bail. Then I had two other teams call me, and I just said, let's cancel it.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. They'll get on board with that, I think, too. But I think the initial year, because it doesn't happen in junior high, and it was kind of our idea with the Trimble, too, right? Did we jump on board with Trimble because ours fell apart? Or
No. I actually scheduled that earlier on. I said, hey, we'll come.
Good for
you. You guys come to us. Fine. Then Unyota was going to come to us, and Southeastern, then their ADs really believed that they could not have a 707 junior high level.
Yep.
That's so, awesome. I don't know. So, Wellston was going to come.
Nice of you.
I think it's awesome. Even if you don't.
Not Jackson.
Even if you don't do great, though, in those 707s. You know, and it's like Dusty was doing in that game. You're teaching kids.
You're learning something.
They're learning how to be pass coverage only, and
whether
that's all they
not,
have to focus on. And they're getting a little bit from that.
And the bad thing about it is that a lot of coaches, high school coaches, not a lot, but some really don't like it, is because you get to the linebackers used to pass coverage so much.
Yeah.
So after you do 7-on-7, then you have to break them down
teach them to run.
Yeah,
that's true.
But the thing is that look at our high school program. We're all about passing these days, and we have a real good quarterback coming up, 7th grade level.
Yes.
And he can throw the ball great and stuff. That would actually – he'll step right inside there.
Yeah.
He has
the majority of programs now are going to –
spread.
A certain type of – at least some certain type of a spread offense.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, you don't really see the traditional, you know, ground and pound attack.
No.
Not – overwhelming. I mean, you'll still see maybe out of 10 games, you might see two or three.
Yeah, 8th grade
like
level
that.
You will.
Yeah.
Junior high 8th grade level this year you will. Well, that's all we are, bud.
Yeah, it's interesting. It really is. It's
double tight, bud.
Yeah. I love our offense.
Yeah.
Double D is that
you
would call
Double
back
D, yeah. Yep, that's
double
what
D.
It was. That was what we went with Queen to the Double D, I think, right?
Yes.
Queen went to it right after O'Rourke, and it was really just a modified version of the Wishbone, really.
That's exactly what it was.
It's we're lining up, and you're either beating us or we're whipping your butt, and that's I love it.
And a double D formation is actually you snap the ball where the wishbone, where that running back would actually be in a wishbone.
Okay,
that's what the work was.
It's pretty wicked. So, okay, so we need to wrap this one up here, but I do want to finish with one question for Dusty before we say, you know, we're going to kill this segment.
Well,
I caught
it. New York game.
Did you catch it or not?
I caught that.
You caught the ball? You caught the ball.
All right.
Okay. I saw Nelsonville York.
Right. Let me just
the one
say
loss
this
of the season.
Let me just say
Let's
this.
Set this up. Let's set this up, though. Let's set this up, okay? Nelsonville York, they're 5-0. They go into Nelsonville, okay? We're at Nelsonville. We always know we got to give them a touchdown.
It was a crappy ball, too.
Yeah.
Anyways.
And it was a short ball throw. I believe Andy was on about the 40-yard line.
No, it wasn't Andy Booth.
Who threw it?
Scott Brayden's 118.
Okay. Scott Brayden throws the ball. Dusty's over towards the pylons, right really close to the touchdown marker, and the ball's thrown. And, of course, he has to dive to catch the ball, kind of dive back to the ball to get it. And, you know, of course, we can see the ball's coming in. He cupped it. He caught it in. We're all thinking it's a catch. The referees blow it dead, said it wasn't a catch, and he trapped it.
No. You're saying it wrong now, Lugs.
Okay. Say
the ref right there about 10 yards from me said
okay,
I caught
it. This is where the controversy starts, by the
He's
way.
He's going to actually ask Jason.
Yes.
There's a ref right there by me 10 yards from me said I caught it. The ref down there at the line of scrimmage, he said no catch.
The one holding the money?
Probably.
Yes, Nelsonville. So big controversy over this game.
I mean,
we're crowds going crazy. The game's over.
Oh, so
we
that
just
was
lost.
That
hearts
was
are broken.
Game.
Yeah, that was last.
Now Nelsonville, that game they scored on what was it
punt
a block?
Return?
A punt return, and then like there was another like a block punt or a kickoff return or something.
I thought they, didn't you lose 7-6?
I thought they scored twice.
I know, find us out.
We're going to have to find out the exact score of this one, just because we need the facts from the man who was in the heat of this moment is what we need. So we are going to lost 13-14.
So I was right.
Yes.
I think Jack told me
and our only touchdown
didn't
came in the fourth quarter, by the way. So we're losing 14-0, right? And we score in the fourth quarter, and we're going down to tie up the game. Or no, we scored in the first quarter. So. Right.
And then
and then we were going down.
So we were going to take the lead on that touchdown.
13-14, and this was the game-winning pass of the game. Going to Dusty Ward, a sophomore, by the way, right? Or junior that year?
Junior.
Chance to catch the ball. Go 6-0 against Nelsonville. Looks like a good catch. We all thought that I was in the stands watching. We thought it was a good catch. And they called it incomplete. So, quote of the day. In your opinion, you caught the ball or not? Because let me just say before you answer this, we've talked about this for years, and for a very long time, Dusty was just hush about it. He wouldn't answer the question for a long time.
Oh, it's embarrassing, even right now, even, what, 20-something years ago?
He would not answer it. He wouldn't deny it or confirm that he caught this ball. He just said,
just
I'm not answering.
This way, Lugs. I only missed one pass.
So you caught the ball. You're saying on the air you caught the ball. You should have been 10-0, probably second or third in seed, and not had to play Sheridan in the first round, probably.
That was a great game.
Maybe would have played Fairland.
We heard her. That may not have been good, right? They were number one that year.
Now, every single time I see Jerry Zinn, he brings that up.
Really?
Every single time. Even this day, every time. We'll be walking around somewhere. Hey, don't drop that. Why didn't you catch that ball? Every single time, he'll have some kind of smart buck coming. Every single time.
It's insane because out of the most famous thing that happened that season, you beat Sheridan, and I'll tell you right now, and I was at that game too, that was a slobber knocker of a game. Them boys hit. We beat the crap out of each other for 4 quarters.
Jason Wall went off in that game.
Yeah, that was an insane game. We won that playoff game, and that is a big moment in Vinton County history. And then we go to play Ironton against Jermon Jackson, and that huge offensive tackle they had, I can't remember his name anymore.
Number one in the state.
Yeah, beast, man, absolute beast. And went to the wire with them in overtime, and the most thing that everybody remembers about that season is that Nelsonville catch that they screwed us on that we should have had as a catch and could have won that game, and they called it incomplete. And you're right, it was a scandal.
Oh, you loved it.
No. That is not true. No, that is.
It's like the 72 Dolphins. Yeah,
exactly.
I get happy every time
I cracked
up
with the wine bottle right after he dropped that. I was like, there you go, Dusty. You want a sip of wine? I don't know. I am always a Vinton County. I am dying for the next 10-0 team. I want it to happen. I always want Vinton County to be successful. And we always get these little arguments about 93 versus 91. But you never, like I said, we all played together. I mean, Dusty still kind of played with me. He was younger than me, but we still kind of played together. But we always want to be successful. And that play was such a controversial play in the biggest season we've ever had. I'll say we were 10-0. But to go to the playoffs and win a playoff game, that's the biggest season we've ever had. And that was a huge play that could have even changed so many different things if the refs didn't blow the call, you know. So right here, right now, he's saying it. You caught the ball.
I did.
No reason to lie now,
that's
right?
That's right. Nope. 25 years later, right?
It's over.
So, yeah. Okay, that's all we needed. All right, we are going to wrap up the Dusty one.
Okay, that is awesome. I don't know how long that was, but that was really cool.
Yeah, we're not editing this either. This is 45 minutes of Dusty Ward right here.
All right, we'll be back for the Player of the Week next. Welcome back to episode 7.1 of the Viking Red Zone podcast, brought to you by J&K Contracting. One call does it all, 698-3521, and it's time. The time that everybody looks forward to every week, weighs on everybody's mind. Even during the game, everybody's thinking, oh man, who's going to win the Player of the Week this week?
Yeah.
You know.
Big discussion all week long. Yeah.
VCVikings.com Player of the Week.
Water cooler talk, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. I got people begging me to tell them who it is
early.
I,
you know, and I'm not going to lie, this is legit. I had three people text me last night asking me who player of the other week was. I didn't answer them. Sorry, guys, I love you, but, you know, that's confidential information, man. You just don't get that early, okay? So it's just not going to happen.
Okay, so who's on the ticket?
I might have slipped to one of them. I
that's
lie,
all right.
So, but no.
Who's on the ticket this week?
All right, man, player of the week. Week six against Alexander. We're over the halfway mark. So the candidates for this week, and we actually have four this week, because I kind of felt like there were four that needed to be on the ballot, you know, give some people a shot here. Of course, Dalen Yates, 17 rushes for 272 yards, three touchdowns in the game, 6 for 12 passing for 90 yards, one touchdown in the game, so four total touchdowns, 3.5 tackles, and one broken up pass. Big thing for Dalen Yates is 272 yards was 24 yards away from breaking the school record. Held by Timmy Uzi from last year against Fed Hawk, by the way. So it was really so close to happening. Just didn't get it there in the fourth quarter. But what a day. 270 yards rushing. He's over 700 yards rushing right now. He's getting really close to breaking the single season rushing record. And he's got 990-some passing yards, 997, I believe. So he's less than 100 away from breaking the single season passing record also. So
I'm going to guess that comes down – next game.
Yeah, he's just what he's doing is amazing. So our second candidate for this week is the offensive line, and I kind of feel like these guys don't get any credit all year long, and I'll tell you, each week they're getting better and better and better. We're running the ball. We're a spread offense, and we're running the ball almost like we're a power offense.
Right.
We've had 36 carries one game, 34 carries another game. 408 yards rushing this week, and Nalen never got touched. He never got sacked in the game. Now he had a few yards for loss there on the runs, but never gave up a sack the whole time. Bryce Dameron, Brock Ray, Nick Pittman, help me out. Who's the other two that play on the other side of the ball? Darren Perry. Anyways, great lineman, deserved to be on the ballot. They're doing a great job. Wanted to give them a little bit of a shout-out. So the offensive linemen are our second player of the week candidates. Our third player of the week, Antonio Mendez, been out for 3 weeks, had a head concussion, had to sit out for 3 weeks, comes back this week and had 7 tackles, 3.5 for a loss. Now, 3.5 for a loss led the team. That's impressive. And I don't think we've had 3.5 tackles for a loss by the whole team in 2 or 3 games, and he did it by himself in one game. So the kid was all over the field. He played hard. He hit hard. 7 tackles is awesome. Your first game back, he really did a good job. He did a great job on defense. Props to him. Antonio is our third one. And our fourth one, Caleb Montgomery, 4 receptions, 72 yards, 1 touchdown, 5 carries for 46 yards rushing, 11 tackles in the game, led the team in tackles again. All over the field on defense. Two and a half tackles for a loss. Amazing stat there. Had an interception. Had a broken up pass. Had a big hit for a fumble that, you know, we didn't get. So, but a big, big hit. He had a couple other big hits in the secondary, too. Mm-hmm. Just smacking people. I mean, looked like Junior Seau out there running around. I mean, it was just insane. Or, dare I say, Taquio Spikes, maybe. That might be a better analogy.
How about Chris Spielman or somebody else?
Bosworth. We'll say Bosworth. We'll keep it neutral. So, you know, he looked like a Brian Bosworth. But okay, so anyways, all right. Here are our candidates of the week. Nalen Yates, great game. Offensive line played outstanding. Antonio Mendez, great game on the defensive side of the football. We're proud of you. Caleb Montgomery, doing everything asked on the field, doing catching, receiving, rushing. I feel like he could probably go out there and make a sweet tea while he's playing football or something. I don't know. The kid can do it all. Doing a great job this year.
Very smart kid. Very smart.
He is, man. He plays his heart out, too. He leaves it out there on the field every time. Good kid. Okay. Our player of the week for this week, we're going to let Dusty go ahead and announce it. Who got the player of the week, Dusty?
Caleb Montgomery.
Number two on the year, right?
Second time. He got it week one. Now he gets it in week six. So, yes. Congratulations, Caleb. We're super proud of you. So
I don't think overall you could have any better of a game than what he had.
No, I mean,
and even what didn't show up in the stats, I mean, he affected the game almost every single play on defense, especially in the second half. I mean, you had to be aware of where he was if you were Alexander, just because of what he was capable of doing and what he was doing.
It's almost like he even knew the place before it even happened. I'm telling you, how he jumped and got that interception,
right,
bud.
Exactly.
How he did that, I don't know.
Exactly.
That's still just
really impressive, yeah. And, It's like you said, the things he's doing all over, and the big, what was it, a 60-yard touchdown catch, I believe? I can't remember how long the touchdown catch was. Amazing catch. The kid's doing it all. I mean, it's just.
One thing that's surprising to me is the fact, and especially on that touchdown catch, it's like he catches at the ball, and you got defenders coming up on him, and it's like, okay, well, they're going to get him. They're going to bring him down. And he just turns it on, and he just separates himself. It's like the speed, it's so. I don't know. You just look at him, you don't think he's that fast, but he is.
That's quick.
It's the effort. You know, I mean, you can just see when he's running hard, and you can see it. And we've seen Hunter do this, you know, a lot of times, too,
right.
You know, when he's running the ball.
Right.
I mean, sometimes you see him, and you're like, yeah, they're gone. You know, you can see it because the way they're running at that stage. You see it, and you see that with Caleb every play.
Right.
Every play, and even on defense. When they threw a pass out to the flat. And you could see Caleb coming after that kid, and you knew it. I was like, this kid's getting leveled, and wham! I mean, he just drills him, and you're like, oh, man, I seen that coming a mile away. Because once he kicks it in, you know he's coming. And
another thing I want to point out, and probably should have done this in the review part, but there were – this game last Friday against Alexander was the first time that I saw four or five Spartans get up slow. I've not seen that through, you know, this season. So many of the opposite team, you know, get hit so hard that they get up slow or they feel it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like they just had an extra gear. You know, I don't know if it was homecoming or what it was, but there was something there where they wanted to go out and prove a point, and it could have been, you know, like you said last week about coming off of the Athens loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, want to make a statement, and I think that they made it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'd tell you one thing. What I did notice, you mentioned offense line. We forgot to mention this earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually tell Dylan Perry is back on that field. I seen three, four pancakes he did. I really do believe he's that leader of offense line for sure.
Is it Darren Wright? Yes. Darren Perry?
He worked his butt off season stuff. You could tell he's back.
Right. Yeah, and I've heard from people, too, talking about Darren that you know, this kid has potential to even go maybe play football somewhere this year. And that's a big statement because, I mean, obviously, you know, Bryce Dameron is the standout. He's the 6'6", 345-pound kid that looks like he should, you know, I don't know what. He's just a monster. So, and Darren's getting a lot of credit for what he's doing right now. And that's really cool. Like I said, with the offensive line, he's just seeing these kids that are actually kind of growing up and playing some really good ball.
Yeah.
And the line's getting better every week. I mean, on the defense and the offensive side of the ball, too. You know, and we've seen it. We've seen what Kason Collins has been on this list twice. He hasn't won it yet. He's been on it twice.
He had some awesome plays in the second half of last Friday's game too.
Yeah, he did. So you're seeing a lot of kids step up, and I think it all starts with Caleb. I hate to say that, and Nathan. I mean, but you need your leaders, and
you got to have your leader.
I think when you're seeing Caleb out there and he's leaving it all on the field and he's playing with heart and everything, and I think all these other kids are kind of picking up on it, and I think that's why you're seeing Caleb. You know, and just to point out, we had 11 tackles from Caleb. We had 7 tackles from Mendez. You look through the stats, and these kids are kind of feeding off what Caleb's doing, and he's leading it. But every week, there's a second or a third kid that wasn't on that list the week before, you know, that's playing well.
That.
So,
so
you're getting kids that are stepping up to this, and Caleb's being that great leader they need on that defense, and I think it's showing, and I think each week they're getting better. So props to Caleb. I mean, he deserves player of the week. You know, he's doing an awesome job. And I think this is helping the whole team grow. I think he's really doing an amazing job
without a doubt.
So,
without
really
a doubt.
Proud of him.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's going to do it for 7-1, right?
7-1. We are done with our Monday episode.
Yeah. Done with the Monday episode.
Yep. So.
We didn't say this. We didn't say this. Eli Downs kicked a field goal.
Oh, yeah.
Eli Downs kicked a field goal. That is right. Yes. How did we leave that out?
I don't know why we didn't say it before.
First field goal since 2007, correct?
I believe
that's what I'm hearing.
2007. That's our first field goal in 9 years.
The last field goal we kicked was at Memphis. I think it was a 36-yarder, and it was Nick Hearn that kicked it.
Yes.
But, yeah. And we were up there doing the broadcast – it was fourth down and what, three or four?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's kind of,
You're already up 34-20.
You don't want to run
two down possession for us.
Yeah, easily.
Just get a first down, kneel down.
Exactly.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Like, I don't have any problem with it. I wanted them to send him out there, and I was so happy when he went running out on the field.
Oh, yeah.
And he made it. And it was, and everybody in the stands, man, it was just like the first time we scored a touchdown that night. Oh, it just erupted because everybody knows how we don't kick. Yeah. We don't kick field goals. We never have really ever before. Yeah. So
and the game was iced. I mean, the game was done. It was 34-20. There was only a minute or two left, right? I don't think there was a minute left on the clock, I think. So
right. And, for him to come out there in that situation on the right hash, I mean, it wasn't an easy kick. And
Weather conditions, too. On the
following kickoff, he slips and falls when he's trying to kick the ball. So, I mean, he had everything against him in that situation, and he goes out there and he makes the kick. Now, obviously, there probably was – I mean, there probably was pressure because he's out there. You know, there's stands full.
Sure.
But the game's over. It's not like it was I got to make this to win. So, I mean – but still, he went out there and he nailed it, and I thought that was so cool for a 14-year-old freshman.
Oh, yeah, he could have scooted back a good bit, too. Yes. At least another 5, 10.
It was awesome.
Yeah, and it was a, I believe, on record, a 25-yard kick. So.
Yeah, it should have been a 26, but.
Yeah, I don't know.
From my vantage point, it was 26.
The bad thing is, you know, you spotted on the 15 because it's towards the middle. So
15 and a half.
That's how it works.
His leg is getting stronger each week. Seems
it is.
It is, too.
You can tell on the kickoffs. And I know, you know, they kind of split time, you
with
know,
Chris
with Chris on the kickoffs. But you can tell on the kickoffs he's kicking it. I mean, he slipped and fell after that on the next kickoff, and it still went to the 25-yard line. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't do that. I mean –
yeah, and then I'm okay with a 20-yard kick right now because, you know, a 20-yard kick, and I think we talked about this last week, a 20-yard kick's going to be a on the one kick in another year or two, right?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
He's going to be able to put it right to the end zone. So
if you can get it to the 20 now, you're going to be close to the end zone.
20's a great kick, yeah.
And if you can – how many times have we given up yardage on kickoffs, whether we kick it to the 30 and they return it to the 50 or we kick it, you know, to the 40-yard line? If you can kick it to the end zone, that's a touchback, automatically a touchback.
Yeah.
If it crosses the goal line, no matter if you catch it in there or it just rolls in, it's a touchback. So that will negate any chance the opponent has of making something happen on special teams.
Yep.
And that is absolutely huge.
With special teams was a big problem last week. So.
Yeah, and in the first half. And a lot of teams that you see year after year be good, like the like Jackson, Chillicothe, Logan, they all have Athens, they all have kickers, they all have good kicking, you know, and that's – one of the things that we have lacked so many years.
Yeah, it was really cool.
More
to see
years
that.
Than not.
It was
so
awesome.
for him to get a field goal in his freshman year, and I think he had one extra point. Really wasn't great night for extra points, but
yeah, I think he missed two.
Yeah.
I think he missed two and made one, I think.
But that field goal, I just wanted to point that out there because that was so cool. I loved it.
It was awesome. So
that's gonna do it, right? We're done.
We'll wrap it up, and we'll see everybody Thursday, right?
Thursday night.
And Dusty will be here with us Thursday.
Yeah, so. You're locking him up, right?
Yep. He's sleeping in the bedroom with the dog. So.
Okay.